Good evening, Matt. How are you doing?
Hey, Johnny. I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic, as usual.
Always fantastic.
Yeah, it's just trying to bring some positive vibes to our listener. Well, not just a listener, but anyone that I talk to, I try to brighten up their day in whatever way possible. So,
Yeah, it's a great trait.
Yeah, I could be calling my bank. I could be calling the tax people in Canada here. I'll just say, hey, I'm doing fantastic.
I don't think I've ever been nice to the tax man. Unless I've been begging him for a refund.
They're just doing a job, right? So,
for sure. No, I'm just joking. Yeah.
So we are recording early again. I think you're putting pressure on me, on my commitments, because you just sent me this text this morning and asking me if we could record early. So what's happening with you?
I am going on vacation from tomorrow, and it's a vacation that I didn't really want to go on. Well, I really wanted to go on, but I didn't want to go on. I'll have to explain that. Yeah, the country, South Africa at the moment, going through a bit of a hard time. There's a lot of social and political unrest, a huge amount of protesting and looting, and essentially people just trying to shut down the economy. And coupled with that, we are going through a big third wave of COVID cases that is affecting the whole country pretty dramatically. You know, the usual hospitals are extremely overwhelmed, a lot of deaths. And at this point, you know, I'm sure everybody's known somebody that's been affected by COVID during one of the waves, and even, you know, outside of the waves. But we've had close family members pass away and stuff like that. So it's not the greatest time for me to travel. And to travel, I have to travel through Johannesburg, which is currently actually locked down for travel. So they're not letting anybody in and out. But my intention, the reason why I say I didn't want to go is obviously because of this, but I tried very hard to speak to the owner of the property that I rented out to issue me with a refund. I actually didn't want a refund. I said, can we just postpone it? And after him stringing me along for a while, he ended up saying, no, I will lose my full amount if I don't go. And it's a large amount of money, not an amount that I'd be willing to give up. So that's kind of why we're forced into the trip. The whole situation here is not good, and it's not a great time to travel. But we're going, and the family's going, and some extended family, and we're going to make the most of it. And it's to the my favorite part of the country that I've spoken about often on this podcast, the Kruger National Park. We'll be fairly isolated there, you know, in a single property on a big piece of land, and we're going to just try to keep away from other people and just go and look for animals. So, you know, there's two sides to this. It's scary on the one hand, but it's also exciting because we are going to hopefully have a great holiday with the family and see lots of cool animals. But yeah, just got a lot of overall concern about the country and the way things are going and what's happening right now. I've got friends that cannot even buy bread and milk at the moment because the food supply has kind of been cut off to a lot of areas. And it's just a lot of apprehension about what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to hear that. In the entire world, there are a lot of unrest happening. And for me, so I was originally from Hong Kong. I can really understand, like, when people are desperate, when there's unrest, like how it affects the entire society. It feels like the entire society is going through PTSD together. So yeah, definitely hear you. However, well, since you're going to your favorite place in the world, it's something to look, at least to look forward to, I guess. I notice that unintentionally have been kind of following a lot of stuff going on in the Kruger National Park, because there's this subreddit that I follow. It's about animals kind of chasing their prey and stuff like that. Yeah, and in the most natural habitat. And then sometimes I would see kind of in the comments, people are saying, oh, this was filmed in the Kruger National Park. And I thought, oh, like, I've been watching all these videos that are in Matt's favorite place. Yeah, it's really interesting how I'm able to at least experience a little part of what you're experiencing.
So there's this TV show. I mean, it started off as an internet kind of YouTube show, but has become popular enough that it's kind of gets screened on Nat Geo, Wild, and a bunch of other local television stations and international television stations. And it's called Wild Earth TV. they film a live safari twice every day, and they do it out of a part of what they call the Greater Kruger National Park. So the Kruger National Park is an official national park, but there's a lot of small private reserves that kind of hug the borders of the park. And there's been kind of conservation efforts to open the fences between those private parks and the Kruger National Park so the animals roam freely. And one of the areas that is one of these private reserves is called the Sabi Sands. And they do a live safari every morning and every night. I actually watch it every single day. I get up and I've got three monitors where I work. I put the safari on the one monitor, code on the other one, and browser on the third one. And I do my work. And it's a two-hour show, but it's incredible what you get to see and experience. And the animals that you see and them taking down prey and things like that just via this live safari. But yes, there's in terms of like animals catching prey and things like that, it's like one of the places to see that kind of stuff. There's wild animals, lots of cats, so leopards, cheetahs, lions, obviously. Then you've got wild dogs. And these are all like kind of apex predators in a way, lion being kind of the top of the pile. But they're hunters, and it's quite hard to watch at times when you see like an antelope being taken by a lion. Or the other day, 2 weeks ago, I watched on Wild Earth, there was a pride of lions. I think it was about at least 10 lions take down a warthog. And that poor warthog was squealing and like crying. And, you know, it's like the human element in you just feels so sorry for this thing. But it's the natural world. It's how it goes. It's an incredible place, and I love going there, taking photos, just kind of spending time with the elephants, rhinos, and just being out in the bush and relaxing.
Have you thought about being like a full-time photographer or anything outside of software work? Because we talked about this last week offline when you mentioned that you have other passions outside of software.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about it often. Not necessarily a photographer. While I'd love to be a wildlife photographer, like the realities of my situation is that I've got responsibilities, and it's a really kind of hard industry to crack. You know, these days, the older I've become, and I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday about this, who's in a similar space to me, the older I've become, the more time I want to spend away from the computer. So I started kind of programming when I was probably about 12 years old was when I was first exposed to programming. I, you know, had a 486 machine and it had Windows. It was either 3.1 or 95, I can't remember. But it shipped with QBasic, which was a BASIC-based programming language from the late 90s, early 2000s. And that's what I used to teach myself how to program. And that's how I got into what I'm doing today. Programming was my everything. It was my world. Like I was through my teenage years, I couldn't spend any time away from any free moment that I had. I had to be behind the computer, like coding, learning stuff. And like I had such a passion for it. And that passion kind of fueled into a career in web development and software development. But as I've got older, like I feel like I can do less and less of that. Like I just want to actually do work with my hands and feet. I don't want to be behind a computer screen all day. And for me, like, right now, it's about trying to find a balance. At some point, you know, when I strike it rich or when I make it big, however the phrase goes, I will probably do as little work behind the computer as possible. It could also be a function of just me being feeling pretty burnt out with software and having like really grinded hard for the last couple of years on a number of different projects. And it might be the case that, hey, if I ever do, you know, get to do some photography full time or even for an extended period of time, that I come back and then I start, the passion for software gets rekindled and I can get back into it. And there's a big difference in software specifically about doing work for others and doing work for yourself. I find I get a lot more passion out of software development when I'm building a product of my own. When I'm doing it for somebody else, I, in a lot of cases, struggle if I don't at least have some sort of alignment in my kind of core values and passion for the project. So one of the projects that I'm doing contract work on right now is for a massive international, not international, it's actually local, but it's an international brand. Lots of people around the world know it. I'm not comfortable saying the brand right now until I kind of get the go ahead from the client to say that I can say that I'm working with it. But it aligns exactly. It's kind of one of these nature type media companies. you know, I'm actually enjoying the work because it aligns with a number of passions of mine, which one is software development, even though I'm a little bit burnt out by it. But, you know, it brings in the whole nature side of things and conservation, which is work that I really admire and love to do. So if you could guarantee me that my family would be cared for and I would not have any financial issues and I could do wildlife photography full time, I would jump at the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hear a lot about this in the sort of indie hacker space, because before COVID, you would hear people talking about, oh yeah, I'm trying to build my own app, I'm trying to build my own website, I'm trying to create this side hustle. But there's always a but, you know, my work is draining all my energy. I wish I could just quit my job and do this full time. And I think that's part of the reason to talk a little bit about my history is I got introduced to SaaS like not that long ago, actually. So I was in an accelerator, and the whole point of that accelerator is to go on this venture track, right? Sort of, if people know about Y Combinator, they give you, you know, a small amount of money, and then you build out your prototype or try to go to market and try to iterate on your product within a short period of time. Usually it's, you know, 10 to 12 weeks. But there's something about kind of just focusing on the pitch deck that wasn't really resonating with me. Because so I was introduced to SaaS because we hired a couple of people and we needed to start showing some progress and metrics. It was during that time that we were like, well, we have this money in the bank, we should try to spend it. But it was getting to the point where, oh, we need to either raise the next round of funding, but we don't really have like a concrete solid idea. We were still sort of batting between different ideas and we're trying to pivot. And it was that moment that we said, okay, let's just give us the maximum amount of options by start charging our customers. Let's try to focus on the problem that we're trying to solve. And it was that moment that when I saw that I could build this machine where on the one end, at one point it was LinkedIn, and another time it was Facebook, but there was these people that we can bring in from different channels. And then we could literally see, you know, 100 of them, and, you know, a certain amount of them would start going through the funnel. At the end, you know, a couple of them would start paying. And there's this like machine that I could build virtually, right, in the cloud that could work, that every dollar that gets put in, $1.20 comes out on the other end. Because back then, like in the venture back world, that didn't really matter a whole lot. Like it was more about, oh, if you can show a certain metric and if you know who to talk to, then you can raise money. So raising money was a game, right? But able to see the SaaS kind of going from a really tiny little spark and just create smoke, and at the end, it could create a sustainable fire. To me, that was a much more attractive endeavor. So that's why when I talk to people like yourself, I always think that, yeah, for sure, you can definitely turn WP Discussion Board into something like that. And that kind of became my passion, is to start interacting with people like that and start interacting with people that are just wanting to fund their own startup from the customer's revenue rather than go out and raise money.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of what you were doing at that accelerator, were you approaching it from a software development angle, or were you working on, you know, marketing side, sales side of that startup? How were you, what was your role there?
Yeah, well, my role is mainly focused on product. I mean, but you're at a startup, so I'm definitely closer to product and engineering, because we had three co-founders. The CEO was the sales marketing person, so it made a pretty good team. And then we had a CTO who was like really primarily focused on the engineering aspect, keeping the servers up. So that also kind of shows why, despite that, you know, I have those experiences, I have those sort of building product experiences. Right now with SurveyBot, a lot of the struggle is kind of with the DevOps side, you know, keeping the services up, configuring logging and metrics and all that stuff, which I'm okay kind of jumping into, but it's definitely not my strength, right? It's an interest of mine, but it's definitely not my strength, where I can do things quickly and yeah.
And were you doing the accelerator full time?
Yeah, it was full time. I mean, you pretty much have to do it full time in order to be accepted. So we were selected in a cohort with four startups. And I think at the beginning, like 200 startups applied. So we were four out of like 200 that made it. And then in the end, we got some follow-on funding after graduation. So it was a venture-backed game that we were playing.
Nice, yeah. In terms of my kind of history as well, I also set up a startup. Well, it was more of a co-founder. It wasn't my idea, but I tagged along with the founder, became a co-founder in a mobile advertising startup that was kind of, I would say, a little bit before its time. It was in 2009-2010 when we built this. We built some really cool tech and actually got funded. So we didn't go through any accelerator or anything like that. We took funding. And the reason it didn't work out was that we were before our time, because a couple of years later, you know, Google launched mobile ads, and there was a bunch of these other, you know, AdMob was a big competitor of ours at the time, and they got huge amounts of funding, and they eventually got bought out by Google. But at that point, I had so much less responsibility. So it was just me and my girlfriend, who's now my wife at the time. And I was doing it full time, and it was a lot easier of a situation for me to be building a business than now. Like now, the odds are stacked against me because of the amount of responsibility that I have. You know, not just my wife, but I've got three children, and I've got work responsibilities. I've got personal responsibilities outside of work. And yeah, the older you get, the tighter you get, and it makes it very difficult. And especially for me, sitting behind a computer, it really drains me these days, like it never used to. Like it used to get energized by it, but these days I get drained by it. So by the time that I'm finished my, you know, full day of contracting and doing software development, I'm drained, I'm tired, and I just want to actually sit down and veg. But I know that that's not going to kind of move me forward in terms of the goals that I have. And I've considered, like, there's options for me in this situation. Like, I could go try get funding. I could try one of these tiny accelerators that they've got going on where you get like $100,000 for, you know, and that would give me a fair amount of runway to keep working on this stuff full time. But I need to still wrap my head around that. I've considered it, but right now it doesn't feel like the best fit, given the amount of responsibility that I've got on my shoulders.
I think you still do it. Looking at WP discussion board, I remember you saying that at least currently you're kind of breaking all-time high sales records every single month. I've looked at other bootstrapper solo founders, and at the beginning of that journey, it's always, the graph always looks the same, right? It's not until the end, you know, when you've, well, I don't expect any sort of hockey stick or anything, but at least to the point where, let's say, you're generating an income that could pay all your bills. And a couple of episodes ago, when I interviewed the founder of SurveyBot, Liam, so that's what he did, right? So in pretty much 18 months, he went from having a weekend idea, from a weekend hack, to selling, actually, right? So, and he got to the point where it's a default alive, whatever dollar amount that means for him. So I think at the end of the 18 months, when he told me, was he was generating $10K of monthly recurring revenue. And I asked him whether that was enough for him to keep it alive. And said, well, that's like way more than enough. So he probably hit, I don't know, that default alive stage way early, right? Probably below the 12-month mark. And this is from a single idea. And we already have something. Literally right now, I'm trying to basically recreate what you created so that I can free up my time to go for the next acquisition. And I think if I look at WP discussion board, is something that's very feasible. I don't want to trivialize any of your efforts, right? But I think it's definitely hard, especially for when you're doing, you know, contract work and three kids. You know, I mean, three kids is already a full time, more than a full time job already. So, but sometimes, you know, I have to say, right, sometimes it does get really hard because you have people asking for refunds and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, I think about, this is the year 2021, and the fact that there's this global pandemic happening, and yet we can still keep our business growing and we don't have to worry about going to work and getting COVID because we can just lock ourselves in our home and continue to improve on our businesses, right? Imagine if you're owning a restaurant, you could be a restaurant owner It's super, super tough. I walk by these shops all the time and, you know, they're closing every single day.
Yeah, same with the tourism industry and a whole lot of other industries that have just been completely decimated over, you know, the past 12 months. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot to be thankful for. And in terms of WP Discussion Board and getting me to that point where I can work on it full time, it's definitely, I think about a lot. And I think about it, like, in some cases, I worry a bit about it. I worry, like, you know, will such a small niche thing be able to generate enough money for me to go full time on it? I'm not sure. Like, the market seems big enough, but yeah, I don't know if that's exactly the case. It might be that I can't, you know, get enough customers for a niche piece of software. But, you know, the opportunity there is still then, you know, if that does become the case after I've worked on this for another, you know, 6 months to a year, and I feel like it's capping out in terms of how much market share I'm going to gain, well, there's always the opportunity to sell it and try the next thing. So there's endless opportunity in the space. And I definitely at some point would like to get into a business model, a software business model, where there's some sort of recurring monthly income components to it. So that revenue feels more, not guaranteed, but feels safer. Yeah, where I'm at with WP Discussion Board is it is growing. It's grown quite a bit since I've bought it. Last 2 months have been the best months on record. This month is shaping up to be good, not as good as the last two, but definitely better than, you know, the multiples that I bought it for. So it could become something, but again, it's like, it's only going to become something if I put the effort in. So it's up to me to decide, like, do I want this? And if I really want it, I need to go for it and find the energy and kind of claw myself out when I'm in those deep, dark spaces and just thinking like I'm taking on too much. Yeah, I feel like it's definitely doable. And I've seen lots of other people do it, even going down to the micro level of the WordPress niche, if you want to call it that, or WordPress industry space. There's a lot of people that have built plugins and are earning way more than a full-time income with them. They're doing super well. So it's definitely not outside the realm of possibility. And I don't feel like I'm that far away from it. If I just get the right things going and get enough momentum, I feel like I could, if I really wanted to, be doing this full time in a year from now. It's not outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah. And do you want to do like a quick, imagine this is a mastermind. Where are you trying to get to? So the last time I checked, you were at around like 1600 sales for the past month, right? What's your next goal?
I would really like to get the plugin to kind of my big, hairy, audacious goal, my BHAG, I think they call it, is to get the plugin within a year to $5,000 a month. That would open up a lot for me in terms of possibilities. That's probably not, I could never say definitely, but it's probably not the point that I would do this full time. But because I've got, like I say, the responsibilities. And, you know, the one thing I've got going for me is I live in a third world country where the cost of living is low compared to many other countries. It feels more like a first world country with the kind of, with what we have here. But, you know, the cost of living is low compared to, you know, for instance, living in Europe or the States. You know, I've got room there to earn less and still be able to do something full time. But I only want to do, like, I'm pretty conservative in my approach to money. And I want to, like, if I do this full time, I want to be sure that what I'm doing will kind of sustain me for the next couple of months based on the past history. So, but yes, my big goal would be to get this to $5,000 a month. I don't know, like, where the ceiling of the software is. It feels like I could do more than that, but I'm also quite, I always look on the positive side. Like, sometimes I'm a bit naive in that sense that, you know, maybe the market share of this plugin is only $2,500 and I'm almost there.
I don't know. Like, it sounds like discussion boards are a very popular thing online.
Yeah. And I look at it in terms of active installs. And I've got 2,000 active installs. And if I combine my competitors all together in terms of how many active installs they've got about, if I combine everybody, there's about 500,000 active installs on WordPress. So I'm like sitting at a very small chunk of the people that actually use discussion boards.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the market is big enough. I mean, that's the beauty of these businesses, right? Because we don't have to create the next Facebook and have to dominate and win the entire market. So going back to the mastermind thing, so you're looking at $5,000 and you're at 1,600. So how many paid customers is that for $5,000? Just like on average?
Yeah, if I average it out, let's say $5,000, I'm going to average a sale out at $99. That's kind of halfway between my highest plan and low plan. That's 50 sales a month. That's without taking into consideration the model that I think is going to kind of accelerate growth for WP Discussion Board is having an add-on model where I can charge extra for add-ons or I can sell higher plans for add-ons. So I think there's space to kind of increase the average revenue per user to something more like $150. And in that case, it would be, we're looking at 33 sales. So a sale a day.
Right. So that's how I would do the back of the envelope calculation and then work backwards, right? So you need, let's keep it simple. Let's start with the 50 new sales per month. The add-on seems to require a lot more effort, right?
Well, the thing about, we say new sales, but it's actually not new sales because in a year from now, my sales recur. So like that's why there's a little bit of a compounding effect here. So sales that I make today in, I don't know the percentage of the cases. I actually haven't worked that out and I know I should. But let's say, you know, 30 to 40%, it's actually higher. I would say about 60% of those will renew their license in a year from now. It's obviously, it depends on the numbers and how many I sell now. But if revenues recur in from the previous year, I have to make less new sales in a month to get to that point where I'm making, you know, my $5,000. So over time, it gets easier and easier to reach that $5,000, but it is a yearly model. So you've got to span it out over a number of years for that recurring income to really kick in and start making you decent amounts of money.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep the math simple, right? So let's take into the account, you know, all these of, you know, certain refunds or whatever, right? You miss a certain target. So let's just call it 50 new customers per month. Because again, right, like $5,000, you said it's not enough, right? So let's aim a little high here. 15 new paid, which means how many signups do you need? Someone has this need that they need to create a discussion board. They go to the WordPress plugin directory. They do a search. They see your listing. They install it as a free plugin, right? At some point, a percentage of them would convert and say, oh, I need this because I need the license. I need the support. I need to upgrade from free to paid.
That's in about 75% of the cases. Some people come to me through Google, buy the whole thing directly outright. Other people come to me to the WordPress repository, realize for their discussion board, the free version that I provide doesn't, it's very limited in their feature set. Like for instance, you can't have multiple different boards. You've only got a single board with the free version. So somebody will come to the WordPress repository, say, hey, I need multiple boards, so I'm going to go upgrade directly. So it's not necessarily a flow of somebody gets the free version, upgrades to the pro a few days later or a few months later. It's a kind of depends on the use case of what the user needs.
Okay, so just take the whole funnel and compress it into one. So someone founds out that there's this thing called a WP discussion board. It looks good to them. So they sign up and some of them will pay directly. Some of them will go from free to... So how many signups do you need to get to the 50 paid?
It's really hard to tell in the WordPress space because WordPress doesn't give you, they give you a total number of active installs, but they don't break that down by month. And it's only a rounded up figure. So they never give you the exact amount. So I don't know how many free users I'm getting per month, for instance. I've implemented that free license that I did a couple of weeks ago, talked a bit about it on the podcast. So I get some people submit a free license and I get maybe 30, 40 of those a month. I would need to verify that figure. But I would say there's maybe like a 25% conversion from free users to pro users. So for 50 paid, now I've really got to do the maths. Math was never my strong.
So you need 200 or 350, right? So you need 200 quote-unquote signups, right?
200, yeah, exactly.
How many are you getting right now?
Well, again, I don't know. I would say that it is the total. I can tell you I've got round about 2,000 active free users, and I can't tell you like how that changed over time.
But I thought they give you the install number, so can't you just compare it to previous?
No, because you don't get that exact number. You get 2K active users. That could be 2,900 or could be 2,100.
Oh, okay. I see. But wouldn't you be able to tell if you look at this month's number versus last month? Like, wouldn't it be like 1,995 and then...
No, it is a little bit frustrating. So it's hard to tell, but it's kind of the nature of the space that I'm in.
Oh, okay.
But again, I don't know if there's too much of a correlation between those free users. I mean, there is, but it would be impossible to tell. So the way that I look at it is I just look at, I'm not comparing like any upgrade paths. I'm just comparing sales month on month. So, you know, last month I did, I think, 12 sales, and that increased from the previous month when I took over the software. We were doing about 4 to 6 sales per month.
Right. So yeah, that's how I would normally look at it. And I think there is a podcast I listened to, the founder of AppSumo. So he did growth marketing at Facebook, and he had a pretty like basic framework where you just open up a spreadsheet, you look at how many signups you need or paid customers you need. And then you just go backwards and you try to brainstorm as many ideas as possible, right? To look at, okay, so I need for X to happen, you know, I need, you know, let's say 3X of signups to convert those. So where are those 3X going to come from? Let's call them 3,000 signups, which would convert to 1,000 paid, right? And so here, look at like different ideas where he can drive that traffic to get those signups. And it's fairly basic math in this case, right? Because there's no, you're just multiplying percentages together. So you look at, I don't know, maybe doing ads, Google ads, you can do referral programs, you can, you know, do the updating that you've been doing, right, with the periodic updates every whatever, 2 weeks, a month, and that would kind of bump your numbers up. And you give yourself some buffer too, right? Because, you know, certain experiments might not work out. So you would look at that spreadsheet and also look at the amount of effort, right? Because perhaps there's a feature that, yeah, maybe it'll triple your installs, but that feature is going to take you, you know, a year to implement. Well, that might not be worth the effort, right? So the thing you're trying to optimize is effort per install in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm trying to look at it in that way. It's been hard because part of me, I almost sabotage myself, and like I feel like I need to get the plugin to this perfect state before I start selling it like hard, because I feel like there's a lot that's wrong with it. And that's where I start, you know, personally, like getting too analytical, technical about it. But like a simple thing, for instance, for me is to implement an affiliate program and reach out to a number of blogs and say, hey, you've written a blog about WordPress discussion forums or WordPress message boards. You've put the top 10, you know, add mine and here's an affiliate link that you can earn a commission off of. It's like there's lots of things like that that I can do, and I can drive sales. I know that I'll drive a lot more sales. The downside of that is that I have to pay out a commission, but you generally pay a commission on the first sale and then it recurs after that at the full amount and you don't pay a commission on that. So there's definitely a lot of advantages to it. But, you know, in my head, I'm like, well, before I do that, I need to make sure that the plugin has X, Y, and Z. And, you know, it's a little bit of self-sabotage.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing the same thing too, right? So I think this is going to be helpful if we are able to look at it from that lens. That's how we can help out each other, is to look at the funnel. I mean, it's not as clear as mine. Your funnel is not as clear as mine, but it's still a funnel. I mean, you can still ballpark the numbers. You can still look at the activities. Like you said, you know exactly what you needed to do. Right. And the reason why you're not doing it is because, well, yeah, the pressure of life every week is causing you, you know, to go down the spiral, right? Like vacation, like all this noise, right? But if you look at the one thing, like what's your one thing that you need to do, it might be just, hey, Johnny, I need to go and identify 20 blogs. I need to set up this referral program, which I know exactly which website to go to. I just need to fill in the forms and set up the links and send out the email, draft the email. The whole thing could be planned, right? In 20 minutes. Yeah. So I would encourage you to do exactly that. Because I think that's the thing that moves the needle, right? I think because I just got, you know, a couple of emails about people wanting to buy SurveyBot for like an organization. And I think even something like that could completely just throw me off track, right? Because yeah, now I have to jump on a call, I have to prepare. It could be scary too, because it could be an area of the code that I've never touched. Like, for example, this person that just emailed me, I believe he's interested in an area of SurveyBot that I haven't touched. Because SurveyBot has like multiple kind of customer segments. And this is a segment that I've never talked to that segment of people. Because I think there are currently only a few customers. It's a different type of process, right? Because they email me and say, hey, I have like multiple organizations that I'm interested in signing up. So I'm like, okay, now I've got to look at the source code. And it might not be the one thing that I need to focus on. This might be a complete distraction, right? But it looks important, right? Because, well, hey, there's this person in Europe that reached out with his email and wanted to talk about this. It looks like that I'm not wasting my time at all, but it could be a complete head fake, right? That I spend all this trying to create a demo or try to maybe familiarize myself with this part of the code. And in the end, he's just, you know, product tourist. He's just trying to check out all his options, right?
Absolutely. And then you've put in the efforts, but there's no return for it. Whereas if you spent that effort on, you know, some other area of the software that could move the needle in a decent way, you know, your effort might be better spent in that area.
Yeah. So I would encourage, I know you're going on vacation, but I think this is something that we could explore, is to have those plans that we can talk to on the, maybe the next episode or the episode after, where we look at together that spreadsheet and go, hey, this is how I set up a referral program. This is what we're going to do. And I think we will see progress. I'm very confident WP discussion board can be the thing if you want to be the thing, right? I don't want to force you if discussion board is not something that you're passionate about. But I think it could be. I think it could be the thing that you want. It's just sometimes we get tired, right? We get just sick and tired of looking at, I don't know, like certain areas of WordPress that we just wanted to become a carpenter.
It's just so important from my perspective. Like, usually when I get tired, I give up. And it's happened to me so many times. I've tried a plethora of different projects and business ideas. And it's generally at the point where I get tired that I give up. And to be quite frank, I've almost given up on WP discussion board a number of times. I've thought often in the last couple of weeks about selling it. But I feel like if I could push through just on the other side, there's a lot of upside for me. If I can push through and not give up and actually make this something bigger than what it is and potentially even lead into me being able to do some of this stuff full time. So I'm one who's all in the past have given up far too easily. And I like the idea of just pushing through and pushing myself to not give up, because the opportunity is there. The work just needs to be done.
I don't think there's any shame in giving up. If you see another better opportunity, if there's a better fit, there's nothing wrong if we have clarity on that. I think the problem is we have these, as you said, you know, self-sabotaging thoughts where we are trying to give up because of, you know, our current situation. So we're focusing on exactly what's happening at this moment, and we're unable to kind of just step back a little bit and look at the full picture. So I think you can have a plan to give up, but I think before you do that, you have to have a plan to say, I'm going to give up, but before I do that, I'm going to try all these things, and if this doesn't happen, then I will sell. I think that's a good plan to have.
Yeah, I think where you've got to be careful there is if you're like me and you've got shiny object syndrome, when things get tough, everything else looks like a better idea. And it's inevitable that whatever you're working on will get tough. And if you're giving up just because you're tired and something else looks like a better idea, I don't think that's a good reason to give up. I think a good reason to give up is that you've put in a lot of decent effort and it's genuinely backed by numbers not working out.
Yeah, from my standpoint, I think this is your thing. I think WP discussion board is the thing. It seems like it's solving a very important problem for WordPress owners. You are close to halfway to your goal, right? You're at 1600 and you just need to get to, you know, $5,000. And to me, that is something that's very achievable.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that $1,600 is it was $1,600 without any recurring revenue that month. Recurring revenue only kicked in this month. I've explained this before because of the way that I could not transfer Stripe subscriptions. I had to start afresh with customers. So it makes it a little bit easier to earn more money because I've got recurring subscription revenue. Like this month, I think I've got 300. I did have one person cancel this month. So maybe let's say $250. Of income that I don't have to work for.
Yeah, exactly. So you just have to keep on pushing that that flywheel of attracting, converting. And I think it's very, very achievable. I can definitely predict one day where we'll be here, we'll be celebrating with whatever beverage of your choice. And you've hit the first milestone, which was 5,000. And then you hit the next milestone, which is, I don't know, like 8,000, 10,000. And then because it's a recurring thing, right? It's not a one-time thing where, you know, your plugin is just used once and then people can forget about it. It's not a trendy thing. Discussion is going to happen till eternity, right? Like people are going to discuss things and they want to do it online. And as long as...
And not only that, there's definitely an importance these days on owning your own data. And if you look at the way a lot of discussion is happening these days, it's happening, you know, inside Facebook groups, but you don't own that data. That data is owned by Facebook and they're monetizing that data. I definitely see a trend where people want to build community outside platforms that aren't vulnerable to being shut down or to being, you know, non-portable. So WordPress is the perfect platform to keep the web open and keep, you know, you in control of your data. You own it. You own your community. Your audience is yours. And there's no other third-party platform that will shut you down for whatever reason. And I think there's a lot of benefit in that. There's opportunity here. There's no doubt about it. And this was an important conversation for me because, like I said, I've been thinking about quitting and giving up and selling this because I'll get a good return if I sell it now. But it's just me kind of looking for the easy way out. And I feel like I need to be pushed to push through this and to get to the other side of it. And I'm thankful for this conversation, even though it went a little bit longer. So it's going to be a longer episode. Apologies to our listeners for that. But for my own gain, it's been really great.
All right. So let's move on to the updates. So I'm going to go first. So last week, I committed to creating the test fixtures for this part that I find is the most flaky in the entire code base, where it interacts with the Facebook Messenger API. So I've started work on that. I created a branch, and hopefully by tomorrow, I'll have the first iteration completed. There's my excuse because we recorded one day early. For next week, I wanted to have that running on the continuous integration server, which we already set up. So there's no setup needed. It just needs to be running and passing so that it automatically will deploy to the production server.
Awesome.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. So unfortunately, given the climate that we're currently in the country and my own personal stuff that came up this week, it's been a tough week and there's been a lot of reflection that we've had to do and there's not much motivation to get much done. I've just handled product support this week and I'm going on vacation tomorrow. So I'm not likely to do anything, make any commitments for next week because I don't want to work while I'm away. The one caveat to that I'm going to make is I want to start thinking about, you know, what can I do to, you know, increase the sales numbers to that 50 sales and maybe even start writing out some ideas and coming up with a plan. Maybe it's the top three features that can move the needle. I want to start at least doing some thinking and taking some notes around that for next week.
Great. Yeah. Commit to having a mental health week. Make sure you don't open up your laptop or anything like that. Yeah, maybe have a pad and a pen. I think that's always good to write down your reflections and your ideas because I've also been kind of slacking on the walking because I've been pretty diligent with taking walks and stuff like that because it really helps, you know, even though you're not really kind of coding or working on designing things, but that time actually, your brain is actually processing, right? All that data that you're taking in, and it allows you to be more creative is really needed as solo founders, right? Because there's no other people to kind of push us to come up with these plans and stuff like that.
Did you make your commitment for next week? No, you didn't.
Yeah, so the commitment next week is to, after finishing those test fixtures, I will push it to production so that it will start running on the continuous integration server. Oh, maybe I'll add one more because I've been looking at, there's this problem with SurveyBot where because we turn to this new infrastructure, the logging is still not desirable because, yeah, I don't get access to the servers because now they're all in these things called Docker containers. So I've been doing some research for the past 2 days. So I would also like to implement a more reliable logging setup on the servers so that I'm able to answer some of the customer support questions because right now it's like, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Do you want to sign us off?
Yeah, so show notes can be found on buygrowrepeat.com. I am Johnny Tong on Twitter, and Matt is at Matt Jerry. This episode is edited by our good friend in the Netherlands, Rory Jonkerkau. His Instagram is at Radio Rory. We will see you next week.
Bye.